In the rhythm of our daily lives, it's the little things that make the greatest impact. At the Monterey Bay Aquarium, those moments blossom into memories, where every sight and sound connects us with the natural world. Embark on a journey of discovery today, from the captivating canopy of the kelp forest to the enigmatic depths of the deep sea. Monterey Bay Aquarium, inspiring conservation of the ocean. Visit montereybayaquarium.org/together.
When you choose to earn your degree online from Southern New Hampshire University, you're saying yes to new opportunities and to new adventures. You're saying yes to something big, something you've always wanted to do. If earning your degree is one of your goals this new year, SNHU can help you get there. With low online tuition, no set class times, and multiple term starts per year, you can set the pace that works for you and save money along the way. Visit snhu.edu today to get started.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. All right, in today's episode, we answered live callers' questions. People called in. We got to help them out on air. But this was after our intro portion. Today's intro was 54 minutes long. Now, in the intro, we talk about current events, studies, we talk about family life. It's a good time. By the way, if you want to be on an episode like this where you call in and we get to help you out, email us your question at live@mindpumpmedia.com. Now, this episode is brought to you by some sponsors. The first one is Ned. Today, we talked about their Immunity Hero product. This is great during the cold and flu season. Take it daily, boost your immune system, reduce viral activity in your body with data-driven compounds. Go check them out. Go to HelloNed.com. That's HelloNed.com/mindpump. Use the code mindpump, get 20% off. This episode is also brought to you by Intera. They make skincare products that are peptide-based. They really work. You're not going to find products like this anywhere. They are the cutting edge when it comes to peptides. By the way, they have a hair regrowth product called Follitin. That's remarkable as well. Go check them out. Go to enteraskincare.com. That's Entera skincare.com/MPM. Use the code MPM, get 10% off your order. Also, this is early access for Black Friday. All MAPS programs, all bundles, 60% off. Everything 60% off, early access for Black Friday. By the way, if you get a bundle, you'll get 10 entries. If you get a program, you'll get 5 entries. Everything else gets 1 entry. This is to win a vacation on Mind Pump at the Mind Pump House in Park City, Utah. It's a house that is totally optimized for health. In other words, there's a gym, cold dip, sauna, like really, really cool stuff. If you're interested in the discounts and the entries, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com, pick what you want to get, then use the code Black Friday for the 60% off and the entries to win the vacation on our dime. All right, here comes the show.
T-shirt time! And it's T-shirt time.
Oh, shit, Doug. You know it's my favorite time of the week.
4 winners this week, 2 for Apple Podcasts, 2 for Facebook. The Apple Podcast winners are Jay Byerly and Pruvangelis12. And for Facebook, we have Jennifer Wood and Caleb Ramsey. All 4 of you are winners. Send the name I just read to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com. Include your shirt size and your shipping address, and we'll get that shirt right out to you.
One of the fastest ways to make gains and to get stronger is also one of the fastest ways to hit a plateau. This is failure training, but you have to do it right. There's some things you have to consider when you train to failure, and it's different than some of the other stuff.
Let's talk about this. You can't just be your go-to.
Let's talk about this.
Maybe the thing that I abused the longest in my training career.
Precisely because of what I said when I opened.
Yeah. The gains come fast.
Very fast.
It doesn't help, too, that there's a lot of content around the positive things around failure training, too. I think that, and there is this misconception that, oh, the reason why I don't look like Chris Bumstead is because I don't train as hard as him, you know? And so, or like Ronnie Coleman, like you have these super physiques that you admire or look up to, and, you know, these hype videos that are made around the way they train. And then you see the research that supports the benefits of training to failure. And you just think to yourself, like, I got to do more. Even, mm-hmm. And I've seen a little bit of great results from the trailer or the failure training I've done. Therefore, more of it. And then you get stuck in the trap that I think I was in for a very long time, where damn near every exercise of every workout was taken to failure.
Yes. Yes. You know, it does produce very, first off, let's define what we're talking about just before we get into the things you need to consider, because there's a right way to do it as well. So training to failure is when you lift weights or you strength train and you do a set until you can't complete another rep with good form. So that means you fail, right? So you're bench pressing and you do, 10 reps, and the 10th rep is the last rep. Like, you're not going to be able to perform an 11th rep. That's going to failure. And it does produce very, very rapid gains in strength and in muscle building. But it also, again, you also plateau very quickly. That all being said, there are a few things you need to consider. One of them, this is the most important, is because the intensity is so high, the volume needs to be way less, way lower. You can't take your normal workout. Let's say you're going to hit your chest today and you're going to do 9 or 12 sets in your workout. You can't then be like, oh, cool, I'm going to train to failure because I heard it produces quick gains, and then do 9 to 12 sets to failure. Mm-hmm. All that's going to do is you're just not going to progress at all. You're not going to get any of the benefits of training to failure. You're just going to hit the plateau super fast. You're going to hit it right out the gates. So number one is it requires, or you need to do, far less volume, typically between 1/4 to 1/3 of the volume. Meaning if you do 9 sets for chest, maybe 2 sets to failure is what you need to do. So far, far, far less volume in order to make this work. Because if you do, what a lot of people do is they just take their normal workout and just start amping up the intensity, you're just not going to progress. You'll go backwards is what will happen.
It's funny. It's like if you think about a training partner or like your gym buddy, or like the only relevance for having like a gym partner back in the day was to spot you on your failure training.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just kind of a pain because you're waiting on somebody else to show up, and your whole workout's going to be defined based upon them contributing and helping you kind of push yourself to that level. When in fact, like an appropriate way of training, you don't even need a spotter.
Yes. By the way, that actually brings us to another point. And there's some history to this, right? So the original, or some of the first people to discuss this style of training, and it's been called a lot of different things throughout like bodybuilding history, right? Heavy duty training. Arthur Drones was the first one to kind of come up with this concept. He's the inventor of Nautilus equipment. Mike Mentzer did it, called it heavy duty. Dorian Yates called it blood and guts. Mm-hmm. DC training was another way. I think that was in maybe 15, 20 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. Arthur Jones, when he first talked about this, he said it's better to use machines with this style of training. And I think I agree with him for a couple of reasons. One, it's safer.
Yeah.
Failure training is inherently more dangerous for obvious reasons. The intensity is super high. And if your technique is off or you fail in a rep and you have a free weight, you're more likely to hurt yourself than on a machine when it's on a track and it's already set. It's not a big deal. You just let go and you're totally fine. Also, free weights cause more damage anyway. Going to failure on an overhead press with a barbell tends to be more damaging to the body than an overhead press on a machine, right? And you could pick any exercise, compare it machine to free weight. This very same things that make free weights better for most lifting also can make it not as beneficial for failure training. So training to failure, machines are actually great for this. It's safer. It's on a track, not as damaging, because the intensity that's being used for failure training, you have to be really judicious with. Another factor are the rep counts. Low reps, really low reps, don't work well with this style of training, probably because it's just not enough reps in so few sets to make that big of a difference. Like you're probably better, in my experience at least, training people and training myself, you're better doing a set or two to failure in the 12 rep range than you are into like the 4 rep range. Like 4 reps to failure doesn't really cut it very well with this style, with this style of training. It just doesn't produce the same kind of gains.
I also think that my definition of failure has evolved since I've been lifting. When I started out, like, failure training to me was, I cannot literally move it to where my buddy's going, come on, yes, you can move it. Come on, one more inch.
Gonna crush
and you're going like, you know, to try and get one more inch. And then finally, like, yeah, take it. And then it's like, that was failure training. Where my definition of failure training today is, the minute I feel any sort of breakdown in the movement, and I'll still be able to complete the rep. Mm-hmm. So, like, even like as I'm, you know, documenting this whole series right now on YouTube, there's times where the viewer is actually watching a set that I would consider failure, but they may not think it is because they don't see me struggle like that. But I can feel my body like, oh, any one more of these and I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to cheat it or shimmy the weight up. And so the minute that I find myself coming out of perfect, what I would consider perfect form, everything from the tempo to perfectly evenly distributing the weight as I move the bar or the dumbbells, that is failure to me. Yeah. Like I'm, and so that's different, right? When you were younger, failure was like failure.
Can't move.
Yes.
Like the bar isn't moving anymore, which is beyond failure. And also the injury risk is so high when you start
and
to do that.
And the recruitment pattern that you get from that.
Yeah. Like what are you training?
Yeah. Because what we have to understand is that behavior. You know, you could have pretty good form. Let's say you'll use bench press as an example for most of the movement. And then you go all the way to that failure. And then you are doing everything in your power to try and move that weight, even though you can't anymore. And it's really difficult. I don't know very many people that don't start to leverage their body to get it that extra inch to try and complete that rep. And at that point, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you like? You're not getting any better at that movement. I mean, you're proving you can get the weight another 6 inches
by sacrificing form and compensating.
Yeah. So just at what point is that worth it anymore? And so not only did I dramatically reduce the amount of total failure I trained ever, but then even my definition of taking it to failure when I do take it to failure looks dramatically different than what it looked, say, 10, 15 years ago.
100%. That's the way it should be used. And the data even shows no additional benefit from going beyond failure, which is like what you're talking about with forced reps or partials or anything like that, except for the rare occasion. You know, and also, by the way, part of the reason why there's a few different reasons why we almost never recommend failure on the podcast. One of them is the injury risk. Number two, nobody knows how to do it right. And number three, you can never train to failure forever and get great results.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a very small window.
Yes. And when you do this, if you have experience and you're like, hey, I want to experiment with this. So you cut all your volume down by one, you know, down a third or a fourth of what you were doing before. And you experiment with this, you're going to get exceptional gains for about 3 to 4 weeks, some maybe a little longer. And that's it. Mm-hmm. Like you get really, really fast gains in a short period of time and then you plateau super hard and then you're done. And then you go, you got to back way off. And a lot of people can't handle that because of the early fast gains. Like I remember when I first tried this style of training, I was a kid, right? So when I started lifting weights, I was 14. And from 14 to 16, my training was very high volume. It was, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger style, bodybuilding type of stuff. And I did that forever. And then I got Mike Mentzer's book, Heavy Duty, and I did that. And Heavy Duty was so different from what I was doing before. Literally, Heavy Duty was this. I'll give everybody the cheat sheet. It was 3 days a week. Monday was chest, shoulders, triceps. Wednesday was back, biceps. Friday was legs. It was one set to failure per body part. Now, up until that point, I was doing 20 sets per body part. You know, it was just insane. So I did that, and I got strong, and I gained, I don't remember, 8 pounds of muscle in like a real short period of time. Then I plateaued real hard. Now, you show a kid, I mean, let alone a kid, you show anybody those kind of fast gains, they're going to be stubborn with the program. And I was stubborn with it for like a year. In fact, I thought the advice that was given by Mike Mentzer back then was, oh, you're overtraining again. So now back off even more. So then you go from 3 days a week to 2 days a week to once every, you know, 6 days. Like, And it just, I just kept plateauing and getting no results. Then I went back to volume and I got great results. And the data, by the way, supports this. Volume is connected to muscle growth, intensity also, frequency also. Like, you have to play with all these. But if you do this and you do it right, you can throw in one or two short periods of time in the year when you're rested, everything feels good, where you'll get these just incredible gains. But be careful for the injury. Like, injury risk here is no joke. Like what Adam said, like, especially if you're advanced, let's say you do this and you add 30 pounds to your squat, but you're already pretty advanced. 30 more pounds to your squat in a 4-week period, if your form is off a little bit, you'll probably not feel good. You'll probably start to feel some pain in some of your joints. Injury risk goes high. Muscle tears are much more common with this kind of training. Warming up is very crucial with this style of training.
Yeah.
Like, you need to do like good 4 sets of warm up and feel totally prepared to go all out. You know, one of the other benefits of this style of training, I'll say, especially for people who are experienced, is it helps you recalibrate your intensity.
Mm-hmm.
Because what tends to happen with me, especially with certain exercises, is I'll stop 2 or 3 reps short of failure, but without realizing it, it'll be like 5 or 6 or 7 reps short of failure, but I don't realize it until I go and do a set to failure. So you stretch
yourself just a bit.
Yeah, and then I'll go, oh, I actually had more reps than I thought.
That's why I look at it as a competitive event. It's not like a usual thing that I'm incorporating in my training. It's more of like I'm building up towards this display of a competitive event because I'm trying to push myself and see where I'm at limitation-wise. And much like a sport, like I'm preparing all season for now my expression.
Oh, great, so great way to say
this. This is an expression of like what you're capable of, but you don't want to stay there because it really is not beneficial for you and long term in your body. It's not going to be able to sustain that kind of like excess stress.
Speaking of sport and great expression, did you see Saquon Barkley's move yesterday?
Yeah,
he hurdles backwards. Yes, they showed.
I don't watch.
I want Doug, backwards ball, over I Doug to put it on the TV so he could see.
Sickest
this
thing I've ever seen. Yeah,
probably one of the coolest. Like,
how crazy is
in-game live moves?
You know, what just blows me away is just the level of like the varying degree of
proprioception
of athleticism that exists in humans is ridiculous.
Do something like this on TV, real game. I just sent to Doug to group thread, so hopefully you can pull it up on the screen so we can watch it, because this is a really good clip, because they actually do it like in slow-mo so you can see it.
Dude, he was so in flow state.
Is just so unbelievably impressive to me to be able to have. You haven't seen this, Doug, have you?
No, I haven't.
Watch this play. Watch what he does.
Right. Spin move.
Oh, that's crazy. Just crazy.
He knows the defender's there, and he just jumps, and he's backwards.
Is he like Spider-Man? He's got Spidey sense? Yes.
Oh, I mean, it almost so looks like intentional, like it was like orchestrated. It's so like pretty and perfectly timed, like so wild, dude. You know, I was this point also. I mean, think about like super athletes that you made me just think of that. And I saw this other one that they did this whole study on Indy 500 or race car drivers.
Yeah.
And something to do with like they had this genetic like anomaly with how few times they blink. They had this whole thing where they made them all wear glasses and measure the amount of times they blink in a lap. And then they compared them to the average person. And you or I are probably like the average person, and our eyes blink X amount of times and they just don't blink like a dramatic amount of difference, which equates to like lots of minutes of eyes being aware and open in while they're racing, which makes total sense why they have this crazy
champions at staring contests.
What people need to understand is that at the top pinnacle levels of anything, whether it's business or intelligence or sport or whatever, what you have is a combination of extremely rare genetics with obsessive training and practice for years and years and years. So it's literally like, you know, it's 1 in a billion.
Their focus is just unreal.
That, you know, I didn't really understand that till not that long ago. That's really what we see today is just an example of enough time has passed by, enough decades of football, enough decades of racing, that we've the democratization of that
sports, yeah,
has happened so much that that's what you're saying is like that's really like people always like to point to like, oh, it's steroids in sports or it's, oh, the newest technology or whatever, like that has so little to do with it.
It
has more to do with people that should be racing cars have found cars, right. People that should be, you know, swimming
siphoned them off early and giving them a better,
you know what, chance. In strength sports, all you got to do is look at some of the world's best pound for pound power lifters and deadlift or bench press. Just compare those two body types and you'll see very vastly different looking body types because of the leverage that's, you know, that's required, you know, to do those.
And things. They were, and then when you go back and you see, and now we are at time too, where you can go see someone like Saquon Barkley's probably high school footage.
Yeah.
And you watch him and you're like, oh,
he's probably running circles on.
Yeah. I mean, it's, have you ever, I don't know if you've seen any stuff like this before, Sal, but they take some of these guys, especially a pro like him, and they show him playing at like his high school. And if he played for some normal, it like looks like men amongst little children, like playing.
I know you guys have told that story so many times when you guys played the 49er linemen at basketball.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were just dunking on you guys, even though they're a bunch of linemen.
From half court, draining it.
Dude, I remember in jiu-jitsu, when I was at my peak, as good as I ever was in jiu-jitsu, I'd been training for 6 years. I was a purple belt. I could hang with black belts, with most black belts. And I was pretty good. And I remember this guy came, and I outweighed him by probably 30 pounds, but he was a world-ranked jiu-jitsu fighter. He was a black belt, but nonetheless, like I said, I could hang with black belts for a while. And he tapped me out like, I'm not exaggerating. He probably could have been eating a sandwich at the same time. It was so humbling when you go from good to world class. Yeah. It was like, what is happening here? I put my hands on him, I tap out. And I was like, what is happening here?
That wrestler you always showed me on Instagram that challenges people to take him down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, dude. And it's to your point, it's in every class, everything from business to every sport. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know if I shared this on the podcast. You guys know this story, but I mean, even when that recent experience where we went in and raced the exotic cars around the track, it was so funny, so humbling when I told the driver or told the pro driver who's driving around with me, like, hey, you know, today I really want to get what it feels like to have this car get out from underneath me and I want to be able to try and control it. And he laughed at me. He's like, yeah, it's not going to slide out from underneath. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you know? And then what I realized was I'm the limiting factor. I'm so, like, no matter how many times I went around that track, I'm the one that the car can do so much more than what I'm killed with. And then to see him drive in an SUV teaching us where the
AMA, it was an SUV.
An SUV.
Looking back and like talking to us.
Yeah, he turns around and gives Justin a fist bump as the tires are screeching around the corner and we're like sliding around.
Have you guys,
not gonna lie, that made me nervous.
Wild.
You know what's the craziest? You guys ever watch like an inside view of rally car races?
Yes, bro.
How do they know? What to do?
It's so fast.
To turn and to jump.
You have to have that navigator like really focused.
I mean, I don't care who's navigating.
I think that's actually one of the most fascinating things to actually watch is to hear the commands. Way he's talking. He's got a little notepad and he's talking super fast. You know what I'm saying? And then the guy's just like little commands like that. And the trees are just whizzing by.
And there's people on the sidelines watching him not getting hit.
Yeah, they're just.
That has to be one of the wildest. I mean, yeah, you're cut from a different cloth. Anybody can do anything, right? Like I'm not a volleyball player, but I can get out and play a little bit of volleyball. But elite level, we've now got to a place now where people figure that out at an early age.
You know, it's funny, all these like top level athletes, like these, you know, NFL players or rugby players or whatever, you know what they were thousands of years ago? They were warriors on the
field. Hey, this is a guy we sent. Yeah, this is a guy we're all just mimicking
war.
We're like, oh, there's John. He's going to go kill
it. It's our Goliath. People. You know what I'm saying? Go.
Just ride through on a horse and just kill everybody.
Dude, speaking of athletes and like sports and like, so I had Everett decided to try out for basketball and he's never played before. So we've shot around. He's played at recess, like just little pickup things with his friends and like, you know, knockout and some of those regular things, but never like an organized ball or anything. And so he's like terrified. Right. And so the last, like, it was like 2 days leading up to that, I was like, okay, I'm going to help you out. And like, I put my coach hat on and was just like out there with him running drills, running like fundamentals and like really just trying my best. And I'm like, oh, I was like, had all this anxiety because like, this is all like on my shoulders.
You had probably more anxiety than he did.
Oh my God. I was like, dude, I don't want to set him up for failure. You know, this is going to be brutal. Cause I want him to love it, yeah. You know, selfishly he's doing jujitsu and he loves it, but he's just kind of like, I don't know. He's not real competitive with it. But he wants to do this too. And so I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I'll see if I can help you out. And so we're drilling, we're doing this, we're kind of going down and, you know, recruited some neighborhood kids and I was trying to get a little bit of a feel of that. And I'm like, oh, he's got pretty good handles. He kind of sees the court. Like he doesn't know a lot of the rules. I was trying to teach him how to box out and like all these types of things and like pick and rolls. And so we get to the actual tryout and we're there and like a lot of his friends, a lot of the neighborhood kids and, you know, eighth graders down to, you know, his level. And so, turns out cause his last name's Andrews, he's first, like very, very first. And this is just
so nerve wracking to be the first kid.
And it's just a cone drill where you have to like dribble through all these things, show off your moves. You got to do layup. You got to do perimeter shots. Then you got to cross over. You do all these other drills. You come back and then you shoot a three and then get your rebound and score and all this stuff. And like the guy's trying to explain it doesn't even demonstrate it. So he's just sitting there like, what am I doing?
You know? Oh, no.
And me and Courtney are sitting there, oh, my God, he's first. You know?
Like, yeah, how'd he do?
He crushed it. Like he went through. He, like, gets his layup. He's crossing over. He's shooting a perimeter shot. He made, like, three shots. And then everybody's clapping for him when he's done it. And I literally, like, had to walk out of the building and was just like, oh. It was so funny. I was like, why am I so nervous?
I would be too, though. Did he make it? That would get me.
I mean, we'll find out. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he did well, but
that's yeah, so we'll find out. Fifth, sixth, what grade is that? What grade is he in right now?
Yeah, he's in sixth.
He's in sixth grade right now? Okay. So
good time to start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right around when I was playing like recess ball at that time. And then I remember trying out for sixth grade and it was nerve wracking shit. I was going to a big school at that time and there was a lot of kids and very similar. We had a similar except for we had to wear these things that so you couldn't see the ball. There were these goggles you put on and it blocks you from
so to see if you could
dribble without your hands. And you had to put them on and you started and you had to do this whole, you know, dribble forward, you know, side shuffle, crossover. Huh. Yeah, you had to do all this stuff. It was a like very competitive school, the school that I went to at this time. And man, luckily I was Schaefer, so I was like I could watch other kids do it first for it, but I remember being so nervous. To be tested at that point in my life, I had never been tested for a sport.
Yeah.
That was my first introduction to it. I'm in a new school, and but thank God, and I could not imagine if I had to be a first kid and go do that. That's
super nervous. Like aftermath anxiety. I swear, you talking about it. It's so funny.
Dude, speaking of competition, I had my son Aurelius turned four, right? So he had his birthday over the weekend, and we got him an air hockey table because he really wanted one, right?
Yeah.
And he's at his age, kids his age and younger, although he's getting close now, but at his age, it's developmentally appropriate for them to not be able to handle losing. They just don't. Like, they don't understand that they can lose, they'll throw a fit, whatever. And it's developmentally appropriate type of deal, right? So Jessica, she's super into childhood development. And she's like, you know, when we play, let them win or whatever. So, you know, do the whole thing. But anyway, we're playing. And part of me, I'm dad, right? So part of what we're playing, I'm like, I'm gonna, you know, score some goals on him. So we're going, and he gets pissed off. No, that one doesn't count. That one doesn't count. I hit that one. You're going too fast. You're going too fast. And then he gets mad. He puts down the puck. He's like, he puts his hands on his hips. I'm not playing anymore. You're too fast. I want you to be slow like mom. And she's over here and she's back there. Like, you want me to be slow like your mom?
Preparing your son.
I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm dad. I'm a little faster, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was keeping it close. I was trying to keep it close.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you're going to lose sometimes, buddy. That's not fair. You're cheating. I'm like, no, I'm just fast. That's all.
Yeah.
You got to move fast. You know?
I mean, there's been plenty of stuff about this, right? Like, there's you want, obviously, you don't want to just pound the kid. No. Right?
You don't want to crush him from wanting to do
it. Yeah, you don't want to crush him to where it crushes his soul, but then you also don't want to just give it to him.
No, when they're, if this, now that he's four, it's getting to the age where now he's going to learn.
Like that's even how I wrestle with Max, right? I wrestle with him.
You give him some challenge.
Oh, yeah. Like I'll hold him down for a little bit. And I don't just give up.
But you're not going to dominate him.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't just, and I also don't just let him dominate me. It's like, no, I make sure that he has a challenge while he does it, right?
So, but we're not like, it's not like, you know, how they get older and then they don't keep score or they give the kids a trophy. That's not the same thing.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That's totally different.
That, I think, teaches kids terrible.
Isn't that, skills. There's been enough uproar about that. Is it not reverse course? Have you guys, I mean, you're the one who has kids right now in the age level. I mean, it feels like,
once you get past, I think the, I don't know what age range, maybe like 8, I would say, like, you know, kind of coming up. I feel like it changes a bit because then, you know, a lot of those types of kids that just, you know, want to be acknowledged or they're just there because their parents dropped them off, you know, they kind of siphon off. Like they're not going to make it very long in the sports world. So I think that it does. I don't really see it as much, to be honest.
You know that they're, I mean, they try to apply this philosophy to a lot of things. Like we're going to change the standards because we don't want kids to get lower than a C, or we're going to change the standards for the fitness test because some kids can't do this or can't do that.
That's where the grading curve came
from. Like, you know, life doesn't adjust anything for you. Like, again, the working force.
I know.
It's not like a job's like, oh, you know, we'll make sure we lower the standards so some people can get hired. They're like, sorry, you're not getting hired. You suck. Like,
do better.
Too late to learn.
I do want to, you know, companies did try to adopt something. I remember when 24 Fitness tried to kind of adopt that philosophy and it crushed them because what they did was, I remember this, it was like, it was a crucial time when they
got so different from when we started. When I started there, it was so different.
Oh, of course. It was early on when I was there too. Yeah. It was very much
sink
so
or swim, dude.
You wanted to be a top dog because at the top is where you got the biggest bonuses, you got all the awards, you got all the great stuff. What they decided to do, this was when Carl Lieber came in there, and they decided that they would cap the top and they would bring up the pay for the bottom. So they totally rewarded people for being like middle. So they tried they allocated the extra money that they were awarding the top performers, put a cap on them, took that to bolster. And they even presented it that way to say, hey, you know, like we've got a lot of people who are struggling to get by and pay their bills and do these things. And so what we want to do is we want to bring up the bottom rung and make everybody kind
of
more. And it totally failed.
Of course it did.
It totally failed. And they thought percentage wise, well, these top performers only represent like 10%. So we're better off, you know, pissing off the 10% and helping up the bottom 80, thinking that it would elevate the, and it did the opposite. Because those front runners played such a huge role in pushing the company forward and outperforming prior year.
It's human nature.
And then you took all these people who were very motivated. Ethic. And what they don't realize is that, yes, of course, there's going to be a percentage of people at the very bottom that helping them out a couple more bucks an hour, that helped them move from the poverty line or whatever. Yeah. And so now they could pay their bills. But it also took away some of their motivation.
Of course, you know what's interesting to me is that they make these arguments, they'll extend this argument to like things like the CEO makes this much money and the average employee of this company makes this much money. How terrible or whatever. And a lot of people will be up in arms and say that's not fair. But you almost never hear that with a sport, like a professional sport. Like you don't watch a game.
Yeah, nobody complains about how much Steph Curry, LeBron
or Steph Curry gets paid. Why? Because you watch the game and you can see clearly. Oh, yeah. I see.
He's way more talented.
Right, but but with business, people don't watch the game.
Yeah.
And so then they see the money and they go, well, that's not fair.
They don't understand that it takes a certain talent to be able to run a company. Like, well, that's, like it's an art.
That's what it is. What it is if you watch basketball, especially that religiously where you understand salaries and stuff like that, like you understand the game and you understand why a lot of people watch business from the sideline and don't know anything about it, and then all they see is
it's just a job,
a big contract for this CEO, and they're like, oh my god, that's crazy. It's just like, yeah, if you ran a company
way, this is another example of how twisted it is. You never hear them say something like Beyonce made this much money and her average backup dancer or whatever makes this much money, and nobody's up in arms. Because everybody knows Beyonce's super talented. And although those people
are
great,
she's the star.
Right. Nobody makes that argument, but they do with business, which is insane to me. It's actually quite effective politics is what it is. It's an effective, twisted reality. But the truth is, in a market-based society, you know, if you can perform something that's high value and you're one of the few people that can do it, you're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works. Yeah. I know. Interesting. Anyway, we are in illness season. So my daughter had RSV. You guys know what that is?
Oh, that's not croup. It's like a
whooping cough. It's like a viral. It's almost like a cold. Now she's almost two. So luckily she had like one really bad night and she was okay. But with real little kids, because we had to cancel like the party because we have family members, little kids. Yeah. Uh-huh. RSV could be really deadly, but it's just everybody's getting sick around us.
Max caught the flu last night too.
You were saying he's throwing up.
Yeah.
Ned has a really good product called Immunity Hero with some good herbs in there.
Oh, I need to take that.
Yeah. Astragalus.
You've used that before.
It's lemon balm is in there. Elder flower, which is like elderberry. Uh-huh. It's interesting. If you look at the data on, this is what I love. Well, it's also what's frustrating sometimes about data-based Western medicine is that they'll oftentimes disregard traditional remedies. Mm-hmm. Like astragalus, lemon balm, elder flower, elderberry has been used for a long time for viruses. And they were kind of like, well, we don't have any data. Well, there's a lot of data now showing how powerfully antiviral they are. Very, very antiviral. So taking these during this season should reduce the severity of your infection at the very least. You might still get sick, but not get
extra. I didn't take that, but I will. You've already trained me to be, as soon as like he gets sick, I gave Katrina, like we were on the elderberry, we were on the vitamin C, we were on the glutathione. Yeah. I just stacked those right away. So I can I stack that on top of that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. Well, by the way, they're so antiviral. So lemon balm and astragalus, really good for the herpes virus. So for people people who have like cold sores.
Yeah.
Using those somewhat regularly can reduce.
Is it preventative?
Preventative at the outbreak.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't think it'll prevent the infection, but help prevent. Combine that with lysine, by the way. Lysine is an amino acid.
Right.
If you get like cold sores.
I admit you turned me on to that.
Yeah.
Because every now and then it's like once a year, you get like some ugly ass, you know, cold sore.
Yeah. Those are, by the way, you know how common that virus is?
I hate
that. The herpes virus.
It's so annoying.
It's like one in three.
It's more than one in three.
Yeah, look it up, Doug. How common is the?
I thought it was one in three.
I'm talking about the common version, not the general.
Well, they both fall under that, don't they?
Yeah,
yeah. They both. There's one's type one, one's type two, right?
I
yeah,
think so.
Yeah, yeah. One's on the mouth, one's on the genitals.
Super, super common. Yeah. A lot of people don't even show symptoms, and they have it.
Yeah, 50 to 80% of American adults.
50 to 80%. Okay. So it's it's probably closer to 80%. I think.
Yeah, 80. That's a ton.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about money and politics right before that you transitioned into the commercial. And there was something I wanted to bring up. I was talking to you off air a little bit. I didn't say anything to Justin and Doug. Did you guys follow Nicole Arbor at all?
Oh, yeah. I'm aware of her, but I kind of stopped following her.
Yeah, I know. I'm like she's in and annoying. Out. She popped in my feed the other day, and I just thought this was an interesting point that she made. So I don't really follow consistently, but I have followed her. So she's in my thing, and she popped up. And because it's election time, she was talking about, I guess on both sides, this was common, I guess, that a lot of the money this year went into going after these influencers.
So pay them for a post.
Paying them for posts to post to say who you're
now,
voting.
Aren't you legally supposed to? Aren't you required to say that it's a paid for?
If they are, they're not policing that. So they, because
how the hell do they cover that?
Yeah. So they're not, if they are, they're not policing it. And so anyway, she shared three different emails of Kamala Harris's team reaching out to her to say she has more conservative values. So of course she didn't take it. And she's just like, yeah, no, I wouldn't take the money. She goes, but then she was pointing out that, hey, some of your favorite influencers that you all follow, you know, you think that they're voting a certain way, like they're just taking the money and stuff like that. And then she showed the girl from Selling Sunset, the real estate one with all the hot chicks or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's a girl on there that's like really popular. Her name's Chriselle, and she did a post, like a cute little post, and she's like, "Oh, I'm voting for Kamala, blah blah blah, and stuff like that." And she goes, "Your favorite influencer is just taking the 25 or 50 grand and posting this stuff, And she goes, and how I know that is because this chick didn't even change the wording. She goes, here's the email that Kamala sent.
Copied and pasted.
She literally copied and pasted and used that for her caption.
That's lazy.
Yeah, she goes, so she didn't even take the extra step of writing her own post about how she's voting with that. She literally took the email that she was showing our thing, and then she posted it.
This is just our space, dude.
It's like, wow.
It's just our space,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, like, that's, yeah.
We've gotten offers from, I mean, we just got an offer from, who is it?
Doritos.
Doritos.
Yeah. I was gonna say we've seen this. They
tried to pay us.
Food companies.
I'm trying to figure it out still. I'm
sure. Yeah. Sugar companies.
Doritos tried to pay us for a commercial. How about that?
It's not like I haven't had some Doritos in the last year. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be so counter.
It is
our integrity.
It is. It is.
Promote Doritos.
I mean, I guess that's.
I made a joke.
Crack snack.
We got the because they're trying to tell. We want to sponsor you guys, and we were laughing about it. We have a group text. I'll tell the audience, and I was joking. And I'm like, the only way we'll be able to do it is if we're so honest. Like, here's a super unhealthy snack that we like every once in a while to give us diarrhea.
I mean, I think Justin said it best. He's like, I think we could promote cigarettes better than we could promote Doritos.
I'm pretty sure. There's an angle there,
the positive of nicotine. We've talked about
nootropic effects.
Yeah, we've talked about the positive things of nicotine. So I'm pretty sure we could push cigarettes better than we could push
Doritos. When I want to get creative and hyper-focused, and I don't mind, trading in my health.
I'll
light up a cigarette.
All joking aside, I can at least count on one hand how many times this year I've had Doritos. Did you eat Doritos this year?
No, I almost never eat Doritos.
Oh, really? You don't like? Oh.
No, I love
Dorito them. Nacho cheese? Come on.
No, it's because they mess up.
What about you?
Well, when we go on a family vacation, that's like the go-to for Courtney and the kids. And then I end up like Doritos. And then
you've definitely this year had some Doritos.
Let's be honest.
Have you had some Doritos this year?
I had some Doritos.
Honestly, I have no idea. It's been years.
Maybe
I've had one or two just like grab off.
I definitely have more than that. It's definitely one of those things.
Isn't it labeled?
Katrina gets Doritos normally. I only get the jalapeno chips.
I mean, they're delicious.
But a lot of times I'll end up eating some of her
chips. This turned into a commercial.
It is a commercial.
We're not paid by Doritos. This is not an ad. My point, though, is bringing it up. It's like, well, it's not like I don't eat them every now and then.
It's not something to promote, but I've got down on some Doritos.
Aren't they the example?
I mean, I've had some Sour Patch Kids, too, and I wouldn't promote that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's good. Yeah. Aren't they sometimes the example given as like the perfect ultra processed food?
Yes.
As like there was like
the most
they mastered, in terms
everything,
of
color, the feel, crunch, the crunch, the sound,
the texture the leaves on your fingers. Like people, it's an experience that they're like, they've mastered that.
They're the ultimate. They're the ultimate expression of the science.
Food, right?
The science that goes into processed foods because they've checked all the boxes.
Do you
right?
remember when? I don't know if they still do this. Crazy. Do you remember when Taco Bell? They must have stoners on their staff. Remember when they they decided to make tacos?
They've got another
chalupa with the Doritos.
But the shell was made out of
They got
of
another
Doritos.
One right now. Yeah. They got another. Look up Taco Bell's latest special. They've always got some stoner idea where they, wrap a Mexican pizza in a burrito with a,
Jack in the Box. They know their demographics.
They do.
Well,
I think it was it. I want to credit Jack in the Box as being the first. Really, they were the first to stay open all night long.
Yeah.
Jack in the Box did that. Brilliant, right?
Yeah. I mean, you guys are going to be out drinking.
It was when we were in high school. So I clearly remember when Jack in the Box started to do that. And then all of a sudden driving home at 1 or 2 in the morning and seeing, the Jack in the Box line, at 1 in the morning, like super long. It was a brilliant move.
Open that menu up, Doug. Let's look at some of these monstrosities.
Yeah. They are.
There's a burrito taco shell looking thing right
now. Oh, the Crunch Wraps Supreme looks pretty interesting.
Wow.
You know what sucks?
By the way, does it really look like that? Or is that just, have you ever gotten?
That's a studio shot.
It never looks that perfect. You know what sucks is I loved Taco Bell growing up as a kid, and it would destroy me.
Even then, when your gut was.
You never associate it with that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd just be like pounding all of the burrito and tacos.
Did you guys ever order like the 30-pack of tacos? Because, you just eat a whole bunch of them.
You just eat all of them. It's easy to eat them.
Yeah.
It's interesting how you talk about like people that battle with like addiction and stuff like that, like how addictive that type of food is.
The most abused substance in modern societies.
And once you kind of open the floodgate with that stuff, it's really tough to kick it.
If you follow,
because you truly crave it, I love it.
If you use the same standards that they used to label the addictive properties of cigarettes, so we came out with a standard, and there's a standard. Literally, there's a criteria, in other words, that they use to explain the addictive properties of cigarettes. If you use that same criteria and apply it to heavily processed foods, they fit the criteria. They change the brain. They have, there is a withdrawal period when you go off of them.
Yeah.
They change how you perceive future foods. So if you eat these foods, you'll start to perceive other foods as less exciting, yes, and flavorful.
Less palatable.
Less palatable. And you'll actually crave them more. They are, for all intents and purposes, have been engineered to be addictive. And for anybody that debates this, I hate it when people debate this. Like, oh, it's not addictive.
Yeah.
Look around. Like, you don't think a majority of unhealthy, obese people know that they're obese and unhealthy, and yet they can't stop themselves?
Yeah.
It's because it's them against billions and billions of dollars of science.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose. You're going to lose with these kinds of foods. They've been designed to do so. I know. Speaking along those lines, I found a study. A new study was on Science Daily. By the way, for anybody who likes reading studies, great, great site, sciencedaily.com. So this was at the University of Southern California. So here's a summary. I'll read the title. Restricting sugar consumption in utero and in early childhood significantly reduces the risk of midlife chronic disease. So here's a summary. Children who experience sugar restrictions during the first 1,000 days after conception had up to 35% lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes and as much as 20% less risks of hypertension as adults. So this was done out of the
setup is important.
Yeah. Now there's two.
It's wild. I know I've talked about it probably ad nauseum, probably annoy parents that didn't do this, because it is cool to watch 5 years later the relationship already that my son has with candy. We just had Halloween, right? Okay. We just had Halloween. We let my son go bananas, get as much stuff as he wants with that. Never once did he grab into it. At the very end, when we all came back to the house, he chose a candy. He chose the Welch's fruit snacks as his choice. Then turned around, we took his candy, dumped it back in the bowl, and passed it out to kids for the rest of the night.
And he was cool with it. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, just, and I didn't tell him that. If he would have asked, Dad, I want another one, I would have let him have it. But because he doesn't have this weird addictive relationship with candy, because we didn't give it to him.
Did I tell you guys what my son said the first house he went up to? Did I tell you guys? He goes up and he goes, trick or treat, right? And the lady answers the door and it's his first house, right? He's all psyched. She gives him candy and he looks at her and goes, excuse me, does this have red dye in it? She's like,
No, he didn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh. She takes it back. She goes, here's another one. He goes, wait, does this one have dairy or gluten? Jessica and I are like, sorry, ma'am. I'm so sorry. I'm taking my kid away. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
We're those parents. Oh. It was our neighborhood, too. They're like, oh, hi, neighbor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're those people.
Oh, my God, dude. Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, my God.
You might have some bean sprouts in the back.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, okay, so this study, there's a couple ways to look at it. One is it's hard to rule out healthy lifestyle habits that tend to follow.
Right, because that type of person who cared enough to not do that
probably maybe there's other stuff. But there's this other side too, which is, you know, when you're growing, especially in the first 1,000 days, right? The brain is so moldable and shapeable that it and so plastic that it molds and shapes itself based off of his experiences. And once you reach a certain age, there's a plasticity that you no longer have. Like this is, and I use this example all the time. If a 4-year-old learns 5 different languages very well, they will have a perfect accent in all 5 languages for the rest of their life. You teach a 15-year-old 5 languages, even if they're talented, they're going to have an accent in every single one of those that isn't their native language, because there's a certain amount of plasticity in the brain that goes away. So what does that mean? That means as a child, with their experiences, whether it's trauma or food or vitamins or whatever, their brain molds and shapes itself based off of those experiences.
It's formative in that developmental period.
Yes.
And it's like, too, you got to factor in also the gut bacteria and that relationship between the brain
and the influence there. It's pretty powerful. Like, you know, and this is just something we recently started to kind of trace back to that. And it's like, if you're setting them up and getting a healthy gut population of bacteria, I'm sure that's, you know, going to set them up long-term a lot better.
It's wild to me too, how strong that connection is. And, you know, this is me speaking from my own personal experience, right? Like, cause that was, there was absolutely, there was no guardrails on us at all as kid. I mean, we ate candy,
our generation
cereal,
dessert was every meal.
By the way, have you heard of this, like, this argument, like, why? Because what are we, Generation X? I think we are, right?
I guess so.
Where they say we're the last, like, tough generation. There was this woman that listed all these things. I saw this post, and she's like, they left us alone. We could do whatever we want. Parents left.
Yeah.
And, like, if, like, we survived that, like, you know,
yeah,
it's true. But we were allowed to do
the latchkey kids.
The part, though, that I'm getting to, that I always find, like, I become more and more aware every single time I do this, right? So, been on this, like, what is it, a little over 2 months now, or I think I'm approaching 2 months of, like, really diligently tracking and paying attention to everything. Yeah. And so I've completely cut out all, you know, ice cream, sweets, and none of that stuff is in. I'm eating, like, 95% of the diet is whole foods, you know, with the occasional protein shake or bar or things like that every now and then, right? So, and I have no craving right now whatsoever.
Because you've cut everything out.
Because I've cut it out. But I know, because I've done this so many times, that if I let it creep back in, it gets
the more you eat, the more you want.
Even somebody who is wildly aware and knows and gets all of it, like, it still will, it grabs a, like an addiction to a drug. Like, you just, it's almost like you have to admit that first, that it's got a hold of you like that. And that you play these games of justifying, well, if it's my macros, I can let it in.
You know what's interesting too, though, is that the foods now, processed foods now, are more processed than when we were kids. They are, even though they have the same brands.
They kept refining the process.
They've added and changed the formulas to make them even more processed with more artificial dyes and flavorings and chemicals to refine the experience to the point where, you know, if you ate Captain Crunch cereal in the 90s, it's not the same Captain Crunch that they eat today. It's
still,
not
still
the same.
Tore up the roof of your mouth.
Yeah, it'll still mess up the roof of your mouth.
That shit is powerful.
You know, okay, so side note, or we'll take a left here. I just learned about something that's been used for a long time that people have used for their skin for a long time that actually has data supporting it. Did you guys know that? Do you guys know what a derma roller is? Do you guys know what that is?
Isn't it a little spiky?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my.
They work.
The
data shows that they work
because it stimulates. Was it like stem cell production?
It's damage.
Yeah,
it's damage. You're literally damaging your skin.
Right? Yeah,
yeah.
And it boosts collagen production. And so there's studies on derma rollers and like wrinkles.
They're used to promote hair growth too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you can roll it on your head.
Yeah. When I was first thinning, I remember my hairstylist was like, "You should get one of those derma rollers and roll it." I'm like, "What?"
Courtney has one. I thought that was just funny. It just reminded me of, like, you know, when you get that Play-Doh set, you know, and you have these like little, there was like,
it does look like
what are you doing? You know,
it does look like one
it's like playtime in there.
Yeah. So if you combine it, so here's where I was going to say, so our partners at Intera, so they use peptide based, skincare products. So these are skincare products with pro growth factor or growth peptides, like, that literally accelerate or promote the you know, more collagen production. Like, these are like, you don't find this anywhere. You don't just find this anywhere. These are like legit peptides that do some pretty incredible things. They said combine it with a derma roller.
Oh, wow. So you would do the derma roll first and then probably put it on. Because
you cause a little bit of damage, put that on, and you'll get the effects times, right, you know, whatever.
As it's healing. And
well, I imagine, too, it kind of opens up the pores, and so then it gets into you, too. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Makes sense. So they have the
I have to ask, Katrina's been consistently using that. I'm going to have to ask her if she's
it's
the derma roller.
Oh, yeah. My wife is like, if we run out, she's like, get me it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The combos.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
She's been on top of it like crazy, but I don't think she's done the derma roller yet. Has Jessica done the derma roll? Have she tried that?
No, but I'm using it. So I use their Folitin on my head, right? Because I started about maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago, my hair started thinning or whatever. So I've been using it. And I mean, I've stopped it in its tracks.
Yeah, Courtney ran out and was using that consistently and then actually decided that she was going to make her own like mask and made it out of like pumpkin and like some other stuff. I guess there's some kind of quality to pumpkin that they use a lot in these products for that. So But it was just funny because she's smearing it all over her face, comes back, it looks like she had peanut butter all over her face. I'm like, what the hell is happening? And then Everett wanted to do it too, so he wore one and he's like, it's burning.
Yeah. I saw this prank that this guy was playing on his girlfriend where they put masks on, and apparently he did it so that when you pull the mask off, it looks like you ripped off some of your skin.
Yeah.
Okay. But it didn't, right? Mm. So they put the mask on and they're looking in the mirror and they're recording it. And he's like, I'll be the first one to take one off. And he pulls it off and it looks like he ripped his skin off. And he's like, oh my God. And then his girlfriend, because she had a big lost her shit. What do I do? I'm like, oh, that's so genius, yeah, dude. Some of these pranks are so good.
Yeah, I was like, I forgot to mention though, like he put that on because he still had like paint on his face for like a couple days.
From
like,
did I
tell you guys he won the costume contest, like for homemade contests.
He came up with that all by himself?
The whole concept.
That's brilliant.
He looked like a green
toy soldier, like a plastic soldier.
So good.
And, so he's out there, you know, and we bought him supplies and whatnot, but he did it all himself and he spray painted.
Did you know what he was doing ahead of time or did he surprise you guys?
I mean, he kind of mentioned it in passing and we're like, oh, that's interesting. And then he was like, we got to do this. And he took, you know, some of Ethan's old like airsoft kind of camo gear and then spray painted it.
Yeah.
So he had his whole thing like set up, but it was so funny because like he spray painted all these like his pants, like everything. He smelled so like pungent in terms of like chemicals. And I'm like, dude,
this can't be good.
This is not good. Yeah. It's like, I didn't give him the costume contest, bro. I mean, all for the win.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I guess you chalk it up as that, but I'm like, I hope he's going to be all right.
Yeah. My son got a little,
you sat in the back of a truck with gas fumes for like a whole summer, bro.
This is true.
Yeah. He'll be long. Okay.
He just lost probably 1,000, you know, brain cells. But hey, it's fine.
I was just telling my daughter that the other day, hey, is it legal to sit in the back of a truck while it's driving? I'm like, not anymore. When I was a kid.
But I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I had a friend that fell out the back because his dad hit a bump. He survived.
Hit a bump.
He was fine. I know. My son got speaking of like fumes and stuff, he got a camera for his birthday that takes pictures and then it prints out. Right away, it prints out the picture, but it's like receipt paper. As soon as it starts printing out, I look at my wife and I'm like, that's xenoestrogen.
Just a xenoestrogen cesspool.
Yeah, so we're like,
you gotta be careful. Look what you guys are doing to this kid.
I don't tell him. I don't tell him.
Red dye?
I did the better thing. I lied.
Yeah.
Oh, we ran out of paper. Sorry, buddy.
I meant to bring that up the other day about, I had a situation. I'm going to draw a blank. It'll come to me eventually and I'll bring it up again. But I was wanting to bring on the show to you guys because I was like, there was something I did and it was a total, I lied. It was a white lie. But then I was like, I remember like after the fact, like, you know, but would I have told the truth there? Like, no, the lie was the smarter move. Mm. Like there's times when raising a child where the white lie is the right answer.
Makes
right?
sense sometimes.
And I wish I remember what it was so I could give the example to the audience.
The truth is in the lesson.
Yeah, right?
You know?
Yeah, I mean, well, just sometimes there's like, okay, that was like telling him the truth in that situation would cause him to go down a rabbit hole and cause more traumatic conversation than it just be like, oh, this is what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. I wish I remember what it was, but it came up and then I was like, you know what? I got to ask the guys like if they recall a situation, and you just did it. That's why it reminded me of like where this is probably smarter just for me to kind of like tell him like, oh, we can't use that paper or whatever.
Give him the surface answer.
Yeah, versus like going into real detail because I don't want to create this like, now he's going to be freaked out every time he sees paper everywhere, right? Ask the teachers like, does this have xenoestrogens? I can't use it, you know?
Like, does this have red dye?
I can't touch it.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, shout out.
Do you just shouted out your Science Daily.
Oh, Science Daily. Yeah, great place.
Is it a Facebook or is it?
No, you just go sciencedaily.com. People often ask where I get my studies. That's one place. And there's headlines. So they'll post studies constantly as they make their rounds. And you can read the study and then you can find the study if you want to look at the methods and their sample size. Really, really cool website. Children's multivitamins are typically just candy. It's a lot of sugar, not enough nutrients. Well, there's a company that is dedicated to making multivitamins for children. No crazy sweeteners, no sugar, naturally flavored, and it has the nutrients your child needs to thrive. It's called Hiya. Hiya Health is great for your kids. This is the only multivitamin company for kids that we support. Go check them out. Go to HiyaHealth.com. That's HIYAHealth.com/mindpump. And on that link, you'll get 50% off your first order. All right, back to the show.
Our first caller is Julie from Michigan.
Julie, what's happening?
Hi, Julie.
How you doing, Julie?
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
All right. I appreciate all the content you put out. I've learned a ton. And I will read what I sent in, even though a little bit has changed. I just finished, actually, my second round of anabolic. And I was wondering about the number of shrugs. I noticed the first time through and then this time through, I'm getting a knot and a pain in my, I guess it would be my mid trap, not my upper trap. I think I wrote upper trap. And it kind of was never there before. And it just goes away once I stop doing the large amount of shrugs that we have in that program. So I don't know if it's a form issue. I do have a little bit of rounded shoulders. So I really try to keep retraction when I do them. So I'm really cognizant of that, but it still always comes about when I do the shrugs. So I don't know if I'm using a little too much weight or if there could be something else going on.
It's the technique. So the reason why there's five sets of shrugs in anabolic is the program is a very basic strength and muscle building program. And we're trying to strengthen the shoulder girdle, especially to support things like the heavy presses, overhead presses, and the deadlifts. Now, if you've been working out for a while, you could reduce some of the sets. It's not necessary after you've been doing it for a little while. But I do know how important it is for people to strengthen their shoulder girdle, especially as they get the strength gains that MAPS Anabolic tends to produce. So what people tend to do when they follow a program like MAPS Anabolic, especially with their deadlifts, their strength goes up through the roof. And I wanted them to have a strong shoulder girdle. Now, that being said, if you get a knot in your mid back, it's a technique issue, and it might have to do with the way you're shrugging, but it probably has more to do with the way you're holding your head and aligning your cervical spine as you're doing the shrugs. So a lot of people do when they shrug is they tend to either bring their chin up and their head back as they shrug, or you'll see people dip down. What you want to do is you want to give yourself a double chin and keep your head real tall and look straight ahead as you shrug. You want your spine lined up as you bring the shoulder blades up. Otherwise, what happens is you can start to create some impingement in the cervical spine, especially if you have any type of a, you know, slight herniated disc or any kind of disc issue, which most of us have, then you'll start to cause problems. And the way that it manifests is a knot somewhere. And the reason why you feel the knot is the central nervous system is trying to limit movement in that area to create stability because there's a potential injury about to happen.
Julie, do you have our MAPS Prime program by chance?
I do.
Okay.
So yes.
Are you priming?
So I'm a Pilates instructor. And when I got it, I was kind of thinking for my husband and myself, we both have done your anabolic together. And as I was going through it, my range of motion and everything in the zone one and two are really pretty good. For myself, it's that zone three. I had a lot of back problems, lower back problems. So, and then I looked at all of the exercise. I'm like, man, this is everything we do in Pilates. So I kind of gave up on that. And I noticed in the last two podcasts that you had, you guys talked a little bit about Pilates, and I kind of laugh because everything in there, in a lot of those motions in your prime, are things we do on the Pilates reformer. So I kind of do those a couple times a week already in some form.
Yeah, I was asking more for the zone one for sure because of the traps. That's what I would be wanting to see you do, is to do the zone one, and the things that I would be looking at is how well you tuck your chin and keep that nodule back against the wall while you also can drive the wrist and the elbows back. If you can do that clearly with good form and no problem, then maybe it isn't the shoulder rolled forward. But my guess would be priming that before you go into shrugs would probably help.
Yeah, we could do a quick test here, Julie. I mean, it won't be perfect because we're on camera, but I could try something with you just to take a look at how your neck is lining up, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So what I need to do is see a side view of you. And if you could stand, that would be better. Seated is okay, but stand, we could try seated too, but standing would be a little bit better. Okay. So what I want you to do is I want you to put your arms down at your sides and supinate your hands. So you're going to put your arms straight down and then turn your palms so that they're supinate. Yeah. But straight arms.
Okay? Straight arm it.
Straight arm all the way down. Now what I want you to do is I want you to give yourself a double chin.
Depress those shoulders down a bit more too.
Okay. Now. Okay. Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. So let's try that. Okay. Now depress the shoulders, give yourself a double chin. Now let's flatten your low back at the same time. Bring this head back again. I'm going to want you to do zone one and really focus on. Yeah. No.
Yeah. The, I want the nodule of your head.
Yeah. I want you to really focus on zone one and prime and make sure that your shoulder blades, your low back and the nodule in your head are in contact. And then I want you to really create tension there. Cause what's happening is as you're getting that position, you're going anterior tilt with your spine.
Yeah.
And you know, and like when you said, when you opened, you have some forward shoulder. So it's not so much like I can do this. It's can I do this while maintaining other things? Cause there's some compensation going. It's not bad, but that's oftentimes where it comes from. Whenever I hear someone have an issue with their, you know, kind of mid trap and it feels like a knot, it typically is coming from the alignment in the cervical spine.
Yeah. And you don't have to, in the zone one, you have your arms like externally rotated to press into the wall. You can actually keep them down and work on that, you know, exclusively for now, just to get to reiterate what Sal's talking about and really work on the nodule contact while not like flaring those ribs up.
Yeah. The red flag there, Julie, was how you jerked yourself back into position, try to get jerk yourself into position. So you're trying to get in position, you're doing this. And what that tells me, there's a little bit of lack of connection there. And so it would be something you would want to work on, but technique is so imperative that even a small deviation in technique is going to make the movement not effective anymore. Another exercise that would be good for you is a prone cobra. I would really like a prone cobra would probably really be good for someone like you. But again, maintaining that real tall, it's like you're trying to make the top of your head or kind of the back top of your head as tall as possible while doing a prone cobra. That should help with some of the stuff that you're noticing. But in the meantime, you could definitely reduce the volume of your shrugs.
Yep.
Okay. Is there any idea on like a weight that would be good for someone my size, or it just depends on how I feel?
It's less than with the weight. Yeah. It's about connection right now.
Totally. It's going to be all about connection. Oh. And you don't have to go heavy on shrugs at all. And look, if how many times have you run through that program?
Just twice.
You could even skip the shrugs for now and really focus on what I kind of mentioned. And try to correct that and then maybe introduce them a little later with really lightweight. And you're not even trying to go intense. You're like moderate at best.
Yeah. Or even like replace them with the farmer carries or something where you're really reinforcing that posture.
Right.
That would help.
Yeah. We do those a lot as well. And we do tons of Cobra in Pilates, all kinds of the movements that you have in Prime. So yeah,
great.
Yeah, that's good. Good. But when you do it,
intent is so important.
The intent is really important. You know, yes, really create that length in the spine and slow down and just connect. You know, what's challenging about this, Julie, is sometimes it's harder to work with people who have been practicing movements for so long or have a certain level of fitness because your recruitment patterns are so set and the deviations in your form are hard to see in comparison to somebody who doesn't do that stuff. Like somebody who doesn't do that stuff is really easy to see deviations. Someone like you, like if I was there working with you in person, it would be like a half an inch here, an inch there, a centimeter here, and then it would make the big difference. But it's really about creating that traction through the spine as you depress the scapula, as you maintain kind of a neutral spine in the lumbar area.
And you want them very retracted as well, right?
I do, but you notice how when you're retracting them, how they shrug your head came forward.
Yeah, we're just conscious of a little bit of compensation.
You want to be able to bring them back and down, not back and up, back and down and while then, maintaining tall cervical spine.
Do you ever do scapular circles?
Yes, all the time.
Okay.
I'm assuming you're really flexible.
Yeah, I think it's more about the tension.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, with the reformer, we do tons of stretching.
Yeah. So lots of flexibility without certain types of stability can cause without certain types of connection can cause instability. So what I would see with Pilates instructors sometimes, more often with yoga instructors, would be these kind of injuries, these nagging injuries, and it was really because their range of motion was so good,
yeah.
But there were areas where they would lose connection, and that would cause instability. So like if I did strength training with you, my movements would be twice as slow. I would have you slow everything down.
Slow and more isometric, tension yep. focused.
I would create tension at the top, create tension at the bottom, and just really, really, especially if you're complaining about that mid-trap, you know, kind of tightness, I would really focus on lengthening the spine through most of the movements.
Okay.
Awesome.
Got it.
Thank you.
All right, Julie.
Thank you, Julie.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
It's always difficult when you have somebody who has fallen in love with the modality so much that, like, you could tell that when she opened up Prime, she looked at a bunch of movements and said, "Oh, I already do all these, so I don't need to do this. I already do them in my class."
So what?
And here's the this is important.
Matters
exactly. This is important to communicate to the average listener because I'm sure she's not the only one that has thought this way too. Is there's a big difference between doing yoga and Pilates and then doing priming in order to correct something. Yeah. And the intent, so you can't look at, "Oh, look, I do prone cobras." Well, if you do prone cobras and you have bad movement patterns, you still got bad movement
patterns. You're reinforcing bad patterns.
If you do prone cobras, so in anybody who's been watching the series that I'm doing right now, I've been doing prone cobras. And if you watch when I do prone cobras, I'm struggling. I'm struggling because I know I've got an issue going on, and I know I'm trying to work it out and fix it in that. I'm not just going through the movements. I mean, I could do prone cobras, and the average person would watch and be like, "Oh, those are pretty prone cobras."
But you're tweaking every little portion of that.
That's right. I'm thinking about my head that's wanting to protrude forward. I'm thinking about that left shoulder that I have the injury because the pec injury and it needs to get more rotated, like, and I'm holding that in that isometric hold trying to correct that. I'm not just going through the movements, and this is the problem with class type settings or people that take this stuff is they go, "Oh, well, I do those movements." Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you're getting issues where you have chronic pain or you're getting tightness in a trap like this, that means you're not moving. Look, it's not the weight. It's not shrugs. People could do 50 shrugs in a workout and not have that problem. The knot is because there's a problem with the movement. And it isn't because you're not doing the right exercises. It's because you might be doing the right exercises.
You're just doing them wrong.
They're doing the wrong way.
Look, if you take a golf instructor and you ask him who's harder to teach how to do a proper swing, somebody who's never swung a golf club or somebody who's been swinging a golf club wrong.
Same thing.
For 5 years. The person swinging it wrong for 5 years is going to be harder to teach because they've got some ingrained patterns. And so this is what tends to happen with people like this. And then, you know, the whole, like, because we get this too from people. Oh, I see the work exercises, MAPS anabolic. I've done all those. Look, I could give you two completely different dishes. Both of them contain four of the same ingredients. It ain't the same dish. Just because they both have butter and they both have milk and they both have olive oil doesn't mean that they're exactly the same. It's not even the same. It's how you cook it and some of the other things that are in there that create the dish. So it's not just the exercise. It's how you perform them. It's the tempo. It's the intent. It's the order. It's how they're laid out throughout the week. There's so many things that go into workout programming. The exercises is literally one factor. But again, you can hear it in her. Look, I've trained lots of, you know, quote unquote fitness fanatics who were spin instructors, yoga instructors, you know, Pilates, and they come with the same attitude. I do all those things.
Yep.
And then 2 weeks later, they're like, "Oh, this is very different.
Different experience.
This is completely different than I thought." And it starts to work. And again, I could see it when I had, that's why I had her do it. Cause I could tell she was a little smug, like, "Oh, I do all these. Well, all right, let me see you go sideways and try this."
Yeah.
And she's jerking herself in a position. No, you don't have,
yeah,
you don't own the movement. You don't have the control. You don't pass zone one.
Yeah. I knew that right away. Like, I'm concerned about zone one, not your lower body right now. We can get to that later. Cause if you're telling me you're shrugging and you have that knot, I don't even need to see zone one. I know that you would fail. And I know that I would need to work on something because that's exactly what tells me that. the fact that it's not a matter of weight or the amount of reps that you're doing of shrugs. If one side is getting this knot there, there's a movement pattern.
That's right.
There's an issue.
That's right. And you're not supposed to get pain.
So I don't even need to see her do zone one to prove my point. I already know it. But if I was training her it's like, we're going to start every workout with zone one, and I'm going to be very detailed on where I want the nodule of her head, where I want her scapula, what I want her focusing on holding and creating an isometric contraction.
That's right.
And really intensifying that before she goes into these workouts. And then when you go apply 5 sets, 20 sets, 100 pounds, doesn't matter the weight and reps of the traps, they should feel equally sore in the same areas and not these weird knots that are happening.
Our next caller is Christina from Canada.
Hi, Christina.
Hi, guys. I was on your show 3 months ago asking about the carnivore diet and doing a bigger show.
Oh, yeah. I remember you.
Yes. My focus is no longer trying to look a certain way. I just want to get as strong as I can, like a beast. So what's my question? I was a competitor for the last 10 years competing in bikini and then just did my first figure show 3 weeks ago, which I won my class. After competing MAPS Anabolic, you guys got me hooked on getting stronger. So I'm taking a step away from competing and want to concentrate on how strong I can get. I know how important it is to get enough calories in to gain strength. I'm on a whole food carnivore diet, mainly eating high quality meats like grass, fed, beef, bison, salmon, free range eggs, chicken, and seafood. I'm consuming around 1500 calories a day because I just can't eat anymore. And I know it's going to eventually affect my strength gains. I know I can get more calories in if I eat grain-fed beef as it's higher in fat. My question is 1,500 high-quality calories just as good as eating 2,000 lower-quality calories when trying to bulk for strength, muscle, and size? Does calorie quality make much of a difference?
Good question.
Context really matters here. Yeah. So, okay, so if you consumed another 500 calories, but it came from more saturated fat or whatever, I mean, it would depend on the balance of what else you're eating, but you need more calories for someone who trains as much as you do. So let me ask you this, because I know we talked last time. I remember our conversation. Are you okay with consuming honey or fruit, or do you react to anything that's not, strictly in the carnivore list? Can you have any kind of carbohydrate?
Yes, I do well with melons and oranges, and yes, honey and maple syrup.
Okay, I would add a few servings of those kinds of things, because your protein's probably fine, your fat is probably fine. Where you'll get the strength gains are going to be from some of that glycogen. Mm-hmm. That's where you're going to get some of those strength gains. So if rather than switching to grain fed, I would add honey, melon, oranges, and get some of those carbohydrates in there, and you'll get pumps, you'll get stronger, you'll see some pretty good results from
that. Yeah, what about berries and stuff? Are you able to do berries?
Yeah, I can do berries.
Yeah, I'd start to add fruit. Fruit and honey to the diet.
That's it.
And I think you would see a big bump in calories and energy from that. 1,500, even if they're pure, clean, great, those are great calories, and that's maybe a good calorie mark to stay lean and ripped and fit as far as aesthetically. But if you're going to build muscle and you're going to get strong, I'm going to need you over 1,500 calories at some point. Yeah.
Especially someone like you. You have a good amount of lean body mass. You've been training for a long time. You've done exceptionally well considering the calories are so low. And at this point, like adding some of those carbohydrates, you're just going to see more gains from it. Because again, your protein and your fat is great. I'm assuming you're hitting your body weight in more in protein because of the food choices. So I wouldn't be worried about that. I would add the honey, the melon, the berries, ways of getting some of those carbohydrates in, which you're going to, and you look at all the, try it out, but you look at all the data on carbohydrates and they contribute significantly to power output in particular.
Can you have peanut butter, oatmeal?
Probably not.
And honey. Mm-hmm. You said honey already. No.
No, those are both pretty reactive.
Okay. I'm just curious. Mm.
But yeah, I've been doing really good. Like my strength has been increasing. Since I started MAPS Anabolic, my strength has doubled.
Wow.
Hey, really?
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
I'm so excited and just hooked on just getting stronger and stronger. And that's why I'm putting the bikini away and just want to get as strong as I can.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah.
It's so much fun. So thank you so much for that.
How would you compare your lifting before to anabolic? So is anabolic, does it feel like, wow, it's so much less than you what you're used to and you're getting stronger? Is it the same amount of volume? What does it feel like in comparison to what you did before?
Well, before I was just overtraining and just doing higher reps.
Yeah.
And now I'm taking more rest days and taking more rest in between sets. And yeah, it's crazy. Like, for instance, I was only squatting 50 pounds before. Now I'm at 175 in the matter of three.
Wow.
That's so sick.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But you know what's cool about this too, Christina, is you probably notice just a quality of life improvement because you probably have more energy, better sleep, the whole deal.
Better mood, all that stuff.
More time.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, good job. Great. I'm glad to hear this. But yeah, add those carbs from food sources that you don't react to, because I'm assuming you went, and I think we had this, if I'm trying to recall, you went carnivore because you just reacted terribly to certain foods.
Yeah.
So I would.
Yeah, bad auto.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So reintroduce those carbs and do it slow. Do it slowly. Bump them up. And what you should notice pretty quickly is strength gains. Like you should notice within a couple days that you're just feeling stronger in the gym.
And should I take that before I go out or after?
Before, but to power your work.
Yeah.
After too, potentially. But I mean, I would love to see,
see if you can show
a fruit bowl with like honey drizzled all over it before you go into a workout.
Yeah. Like if you, let's say you're eating, 100 grams of carbs. Okay. I would do, 50 before, maybe 2 hours before, an hour before, 50 afterwards, like surround your workout with the carbohydrates. If they're that low, if they start to get higher than that, then you can have them throughout the day. But it would be around the workout, an hour and a half or two before and then post workout.
Okay. Awesome. And can I do a shout out?
Yeah,
sure.
So I took a course through Logan Dew from PPSE. It's to become a pain-free performance specialist because I want to go more into the training. And she just put on a really good course about mobility and just how to exercise pain-free. So I just wanted to do a shout out to her.
Awesome. Nice. Right. Christina, are you attending our webinars for trainers and coaches?
I wish I had an air horn.
I'm going to start. I've been getting the emails. I want to.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Cool. I hope to see you there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you. You got it.
Okay.
She said double her strength, but that sounds like 50 to 170.
It's a bit more than double.
Yeah. Holy Toledo.
I mean, I would love to see what happens when she actually hits some good calorie numbers with some carbs before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's going to
carbs for her workouts.
Do you remember she could have Greek yogurt? I can't remember. No. Cause
reactive to so many different things. And the most reactive foods tend to be grains,
dairy.
Legumes.
That's why she went all the way down to carnivore.
Legumes. Yeah. Dairy. So that's why. So
a big fruit bowl with honey all over it would be an awesome pre-workout.
Yeah. And you're seeing a lot of carnivore people do this. They go carnivore for a long time. And then it's just like, okay, let me see if I can add some honey. That's usually where they start, and then maybe add some fruit, and then they just feel so much better.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Drew from the UK.
Drew, what's happening?
How you doing, Drew?
Hey guys, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
You too.
Nice to meet you, man. How can we help you?
Okay. Don't know. Everyone comes and says, "Hey guys, great fans, big day. Nice to meet you." But I discovered you guys during lockdown, so I had a lot of catching up to do. And the content you put out is obviously really, really positive. But I don't think it gets recognised enough that the effect that the content that you play will probably have on people's mental health as well. It's been a massive help. So I want to say thank you for that.
Oh, appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you, Drew.
All right, so I know everyone always starts as well, a little bit of a backstory, but mine only really goes back to the start of the year when I started taking my training a little bit seriously.
Okay.
I was going to the gym previously, but not really taking anything outside the gym, really paying any attention to it. So I decided to get serious about that. Made sure I could pick a routine and times of day that I could be consistent with, because I'd skip the more cut routines short if I didn't have enough time. Made sure my protein was on point, my macros and my calorie intake was good. I wanted to, as most guys do, I wanted to lose weight, lose some body fat, but maintain the muscle mass that I had. And it worked far better than I expected it to. Then after a few months, obviously I started to plateau and thought I'd go into a bulk. I couldn't stay eating and going and staying on a deficit for too long. So I tweaked a couple of things that you would normally do when you go into a bulk. So I'd drop the cardio, focus more resistance, increase my macros, and increase my protein intake. And it's had no effect. Well, that's not entirely true. Had an effect I didn't really expect. So my body fat went up, which I thought it would, and my weight did. But I feel like my strength gains has actually decreased since I've tried to go on a bulk.
Okay.
Programming, yep. And also like maybe what foods are we doing, and if you have any gut stuff going on.
How much of a bulk did you go on? How many extra calories?
Okay, so when I was in my deficit, I was on 200 under maintenance. When I went on my bulk, I went to 200 over.
Oh, that's it? Okay. It's a programming issue. It's a programming issue, Andrew. We got to switch your workout. Mm-hmm. We got to change your workout up. So were you doing the same style of workout the whole time?
Yes, yeah, so I went because I've run through anabolic a few times, but I really struggled to fit full body in on a single day. So I went to push, pull legs and cardio twice a week. And that's what really was very, very effective. When I went from 165 pounds down to 152 and went from 21% body fat down to 15. So I went from 10 to 12 reps. And when I went onto the bulk, I dropped down to 5 to 8 reps. Dropped the cardio and just focused on the resistance. But I felt that from when I first started the bulk to now, and I was doing three sets. Now I actually have to strip some weight off during the last set because I can't manage what I was managing before. It's the first time that I never really could. I thought I'd tweaked all the things that I needed to. It was the first time I'd come into consideration of my age, because I'm 43. I know your testosterone starts to go down a little bit as you get older. Does it become that much more difficult as you get older to put on muscle, and is it easier to lose body fat?
A little bit,
There's something else going on.
It wouldn't be that. It wouldn't happen that quickly, though.
Yeah.
What you tend to see as you age, especially for consistent, is a slow, gradual change. It doesn't happen from one phase to another. So it's either the workout programming, you need to back off on some volume, or there's something else, this other factor,
sleep or stress.
Yeah.
How are we 100%. Testing this body fat too, by the way?
You're not going to like this.
Okay.
I've got a body composition scale.
Okay.
I know they're not accurate, but basically I was focusing mainly on how my clothes fit and how much weight I was shifting at the gym.
Sure.
Yeah. And I now I don't want to have to replace all my wardrobe because all of my clothes are now far too big. I've dropped 4 inches off my waist since I started the cut, and the weight continuously increased while I was on my cut. But I haven't been able to put any. I've been on the bulk now for about a month and a half, and I haven't been able to put any weight on the bar at all.
Typically that's a programming issue. If all the other factors
sounds like stress
are the same, and stress and sleep are the same as they were before.
They're not too different. I usually try and go to the gym now before work rather than after, so I'm not too tired, so my sleep pattern's all the same. There's things at work and home with and a few things that have elevated stress a bit, but not anything that I would really consider that I would notice that much.
Okay. And when you say a little bit, are you somebody that like you don't really address stress? Sometimes people say it's a little bit, and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, well, you know, I'm getting divorced. Oh, that's a big stress. You know, is it really a little bit of stress, or is it something like if the average person would be like, hey mate, you're going through something.
Yeah, I think you.
It's nothing major like that. It's just a remortgage on the house and trying to get all the paperwork and everything sorted on time and solicitors letters and emails backwards and forwards. But
okay,
other than that, really nothing. nothing else has changed. My son is now he's 9 going on 14, so he's becoming more and more of a handful.
let's switch up your programming. Yeah. I'd like to see
you as 15.
There you go. How long have you been working out consistently now?
Consistently, like not ignoring the fact that I was that I wasn't paying attention to diet and anything before that. It's about 3 years that I've been going to the gym, but I only really made a conscious effort that, you know, I'm putting in all this work and I'm not seeing any results. I've tried so many different things. I went through anabolic and I enjoyed it, but it was difficult with the time constraints. It was like, well, there's got to be something else. So as soon as I changed my diet, that's when everything suddenly kind of clicked and everything started working, and all the goals that I was aiming for, they all worked. They all come into place. But it's only since I tweaked it and changed to go into a bulk that it kind of hasn't.
Yeah, it's almost, if everything's the same, then it's got to be the programming. That's what I'm gonna
do. I love to see you run MAPS 15, Drew.
Do the advanced version, mm-hmm, yeah. and then let's see what happens.
We're gonna send it over to you, and I'd like to hear back from you in about, give me 30, 60 days.
You should see, if it is a programming issue, what you should notice with MAPS 15, do the barbell and dumbbell version, is you should notice your strength go up within the first week or two.
It's going to feel way different too, by the way, because it's a lot, the volume is way less in that. So don't add anything, don't do any, like just follow the programming, trust the process, and then circle back with us in like 30 days and talk to us what you're noticing.
Okay, that sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right, Drew.
You got it, man.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate your time. Thanks a lot. Have a good day.
See you.
Yeah, stuff like that's almost always a programming issue if what they're saying is accurate.
Yeah, if there's not other things that, we haven't investigated.
Yes, because sometimes, like I said, and it may be, you know, I believe them, right? I always believe the person what they tell you. But, I've worked with people before, and it's like we're trying to figure things out, 4 months into it. I'm like, I thought you said your sleep was bad.
Yeah, but I mean, we're all a little bit blind to our own patterns.
That's right.
You know, so you got to consider that.
There's also what happens is when you train and you're hitting beyond what's appropriate volume and you're getting away with it for a while, you don't get away with it forever. Yeah, and so what tends to happen is you get this cumulative effect of volume, and then suddenly you stop progressing and you start to go backwards. And you think to yourself, what happened? Nothing changed. Nothing changed. In fact, I'm eating more. I should be gaining more. Well, you were probably overdoing it a little bit before, and now you've been overdoing it for so long that it catches up with you, which is why we went to, for people wondering, that's why we went to MAPS 15.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, I think, off air about the whole series that I'm doing right now. Like, I could have seen a bunch of muscle gain and still seen positive things, doing stuff, a lot of things the wrong way.
Yeah.
So your body is pretty resilient, and if you're somebody who's never really dialed your diet in, and even if you have a subpar programming, and then all of a sudden you dial a diet in, and all of a sudden you start seeing results. Sometimes it's in spite of what you're doing. It's just like that your body needed that alone, and then that made a big difference. It's like we can still improve that. There's also the potential, and I didn't want to go down this rabbit hole because who knows, but those scales that have the body fat percentage thing are so inconsistent. And if he
had carbs at the time.
Well, yeah. So if he had and you're on a bulk, right? So, and if he's a guy who has a hard time bulking and he has to really push the calories, and let's say the night before and or the morning, I don't even know what he did. Like, if he loaded up on carbohydrates the night before he went to bed, and then the next day he goes and does that body fat thing, that thing can be skewed quite a bit. Yeah. So, there could be that also. The thing that was probably most concerning is the strength loss.
That doesn't
add up. It's like, okay, that's weird that you're having to take weight off the bar that it sounds like you are moving more of. And so programming, stress, and then digestion would be the other thing. Dive into that. It's like, is he now on his bulk? Is he adding something that is just not agreeing with
his
system?
Did he test his hormones? I didn't catch that.
No, okay. He was just asking about it. And yes, your hormones have an effect, but it won't.
It wouldn't be that drastic.
It wouldn't be a big swing.
No, it's not like, oh my God, I went from this part, and then all of a sudden, it's more of a gradual effect.
Our next caller is Zach from Maryland.
What's up, Zach? How can we help you?
What's happening?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man.
So it's a little more nerve-wracking than I thought coming on the show, even though I've been following you guys for a while.
That's right.
Pretty much just jump into my question. I've been following Adam's journey lately with the with his rebuild that he's going through. And you restructured Max 15 to work around an injury. And my question is not so much an injury, but how would I restructure MAPS 15 to be more of like a MAPS like 35 or 45, like a mix of 15 and anabolic if I want to add some volume in on like days that I can train a little longer?
I like that. I think that it's actually pretty easy considering that the program is relatively low volume. So you could kind of go, what I would do. So Doug and I were kind of talking off air a while back and he's like, hey, if I was following your kind of journey, but I wanted to put emphasis on shoulders, what would I do? And I said, oh, I'd just add some shoulder volume into this program. So what I would do if I was you and you wanted to add a little bit to it is I would pick one or two muscle groups that you want to bring up, you know, or that you want to focus on. So it could be shoulders, could be calves, could be four, could be anything you want. And I would build in on those days that you have 30, 45 minutes, probably one or two more exercises on just those specific days. And you should be fine because the volume is low enough on there. What I wouldn't do is add I wouldn't add a bunch of big compound lifts in there, but you could easily add some isolation type exercises. So I wouldn't add a bunch of more squats, more deadlifts. Like the program is comprised of some of the big motor movements. The idea it was a minimalist program. What's the least amount of exercise you could do to get the biggest bang for your buck? That's how we created that. Now, if I was going to go and say, hey, I have days where I could go 30 minutes and I want to do some other things. Well, those other things would be other little muscles that I'd want to focus on. So whether that be shoulders, abs, calves, whatever. And I'd add one to two exercises on those days that I have more time.
The real question, Zach, is why do you want to add more volume?
I feel like I'm not seeing the results. And I don't know if it's calories are too low or, you know, just intensity is a little low or what. Usually I'm working out and I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old with me kind of hanging out. So my rest times aren't just like kind of resting. I'm kind of playing cars or helping with gymnastics or
that's great.
So that the, kind sure. of stuff. So
the real, we want
I don't know if maybe my intensity is low.
Well, I was going to say, we want to figure out why that's happening. It's often not because you're not doing enough volume. Not saying that that's not the case sometimes. Sometimes that is the case. But often the answer isn't to add more volume. Often it has to do more with diet, if the intensity is appropriate. So let's go to diet real quick.
Okay.
Do you know what your calories at, your grams of protein? Are you consistent with all that?
Yeah. So my protein's between about 180 to 200. Pretty much, I mean, spot on 7 days. And then my calories are sitting right around like 2700 to 2800.
And what is your goal? Is it to gain? Are you in a gain phase?
Yeah, I'm trying to gain now and then, you know, springtime cut down. But so I've been at 2700 to 2800 for about, I guess it's been about 6 weeks now. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Carbon app from
yes.
Lane.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
That's what I use. I use his AI on there. And
it's pretty good.
Man, if you're like not spot on with like your scale weight, it will not bump your calories. Even though like I feel like I could eat more, it won't, that will not. So part of me is kind of like, do I just kind of go on my own and not use the AI model? Or
so you feel like you could eat more and you technically almost want to eat more, but the app's telling you to stay at this calorie point?
Yeah, there's certain times.
Okay.
Where I could eat some more.
Okay. Well, and you're watching my series, right? So one of the things, and I'm sure you've heard me communicate this too, because there's two things that could be potentially happening. I mean, you could be in a very sweet spot, which I know the way Lane has designed that app is it's designed to really, really slowly increase you and really try and shoot for that kind of Goldilocks zone, right? Try and get to only barely bump your calories when you need to. And if you're doing a really good job of hitting your caloric maintenance, you should lean a little bit. You should also build muscle.
Yep.
you might be doing better than what you think you are. Just because you don't see any major shifts in the scale, you could be slowly changing body comp, which, you know, you've heard me communicate while I've been going through my journey right now. And I know what a mental fuck that can be, because you don't see the scale move that much. You see yourself every day in the mirror. It's like, am I really moving? Am I doing any better? If you're hitting, I mean, you could potentially
I don't see the change, and I know it's a slow process, but I don't see the change like my brain tells me that I want to see the change.
Yeah.
Is your strength any different?
Yeah. How are your lifts?
Lifts are going up.
Oh, bro, you're doing good,
Zach. You're fine.
You're doing good, Zach.
If you're getting stronger.
You're doing good.
If you're getting stronger, you're doing good.
Yeah, and
don't add volume. Why I was asking these questions.
Sal challenging. I mean, I was just purely thinking like out of like, oh, I'd like to do more stuff. But if it's because you didn't think you were seeing good results, adding volume isn't necessarily the answer, especially considering you're getting strong. Sounds like your kind of weight is staying the same. You know you're hitting your protein intake. You're following a good app like Lane's Carbon app. I would actually guess you're probably right in that little sweet spot, which is a mind fuck, bro. It's why most people can't most people can't do it. It messes with their head.
It's really hard, and I've kind of been the type. I hear you guys talk about the yo-yo dieting, and I've kind of done that up and down, and you know, became that little bit softer version of what I was, softer, smaller version, but never really in the body fat range that I want to be at.
Yeah.
So for me to not see change and continue to eat more is really hard.
Yeah, I get it.
No, stay the course.
I get it.
If you're getting stronger, you're improving.
Yeah. What's your height and weight too, Zach? Where are you at? How tall and big are you?
Height. I'm 5'9", about 191, 192.
Okay, those are good calories. And you're moving up just fine. I actually think that they probably have you right where you're supposed to be, bro. Really, really good. I mean, here's the thing too. Okay, if you're a client of mine and you were really struggling with this, I can put you on a 200 calorie bump for a week. You're not gonna get fat from that, you know. But if you wanted to feel it and you wanted to see, does it make this improvement, or you see this visual improvement? There's another thing that happens when you're right on the sweet spot of calories. Like, and let me tell you, like, I'm always reminded of this as I go through this process. So I don't know how closely you're following or not, but just last week was the end of my bulk, and I hit two peak days of 4,000 plus calories. This whole time I haven't seen over 4,000 calories. And bro, let me tell you, I felt good. I looked good. I'm all filled out. But I know that that's because I'm all filled up. It's not because I've necessarily got more muscle, just because I've filled up all those muscle bellies. And so in the reflection, I'm good. But if I kept holding those calories that high, I'd put on body fat. Did I lose him, Doug?
Yeah, he just disappeared.
That's all right.
He didn't like my answer.
No.
No. Oh, he's coming. He's coming back.
Okay.
Oh, he's back.
There we are.
Oh, hey. Thought you didn't like my answer. I thought you didn't like my answer. You're like, fuck this guy.
No. I didn't,
whatever, Adam.
Okay. So I don't know if you heard me saying that, you know, I had these back to back days of real high calorie, 4,000 calorie. And all of a sudden my body, I saw it for the first time, like, oh man, now I feel really good. But I know I can't keep those calories that high because it'll eventually continue to overspill and get stored as body fat. So then I come back down to like today, 3,000 calories. And now I feel like I lost 8 pounds of muscle, but I didn't lose 8 pounds of muscle. It's just that my muscle bellies aren't filled up. So it's the psychological game of like, if you're hovering right around that good maintenance calories, you're going to have moments when the body's filled up. It looks kind of good. Then you have times in the bodybuilding world, we call this flat. You're not really filling the muscle bellies up. You're kind of keeping in this maintenance low level and sometimes in a deficit. That's going to lean you out, lose body fat. Sometimes you're going to be building. That's that Goldilocks zone. Problem with the Goldilocks zone is psychologically, it's a mind fuck. Because you feel like, man, I just don't look like I'm putting any muscle and size on. But, you know, if you want to mess with this just for shits and giggles, run 2 days in a row of eating like 3,500 calories. Just 2 days in a row, 3,500 calories. And tell me what you look and feel like. But don't get stuck there because you probably don't need to be that high. But two big days of 3,500 calories, watch how your body fills out. But what you need to know is all I'm teaching you is that's just what your body looks like when we fill all those muscle bellies up. And then you can kind of see for a second, oh, shit, maybe I have put on size. I just haven't filled these muscle bellies all the way out.
all the way up. Okay.
Yes, and then go back to your carb all guy right. or your carbon app and follow, because I'm the technology in that and what Lane's doing is good work there.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. It's I like the structure of it. It's pretty good.
Are you on Instagram? Do you follow me on Instagram?
Yeah. I mentioned my Chevelle when you were on one of your lives.
Okay. So hit me, do 2 days of like 3,500 calories and hit me up in the DMs and we can chat. I bet you feel and notice a difference from pictures? That.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Okay.
Don't get jealous, bro.
you guys got a second for another?
Yeah. Fire away, like, bro.
Follow up?
What you got?
So let's say I, because with having little kids, you guys all know, I'm probably going to be MAPS 15 or, you know, hovering around there for a while. Could I change it up to be more of like a symmetry, like where I just change all the barbell stuff out for unilateral type work?
You know, that way
my joints don't start talking to me.
You can. You could also hang tight for about how many weeks, Justin?
Yeah, we're 2 weeks. December.
So December? Is it December?
11th.
Oh, December 11th. So December 11th, we'll have something specifically for you.
Yes.
Okay.
If you can wait that.
All right. Yeah,
if not.
So if you can hang into MAPS 15 till then, we got something coming December 11th that will
speak. Perfect.
It'll speak right honestly. To what you're talking about right now.
All right. Awesome.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, man. All right, Zach. Cool.
All right. Thanks for all your help, guys.
I'll talk to you later.
If someone's not progressing with their workouts, I would say, and they're consistent. Okay. So they're already consistent. 80% of the time, the answer is not to add more volume.
I'm glad you did that because I just went straight for.
I mean, this is how you would add volume. That's what your answer is.
Yeah.
But 80% of the time, that's not the answer.
I should have asked why, though. Why do you want it? Why do you want to do that? Yeah.
But, you know, most of the time, it's not that. It's something else. And again, there's 20% of the time when adding volume is what you need to do. But that's often not the case. And the reason why I asked that is if his answer was, I just like working out and I want to do more. I was okay, here you go. That's what you could do, you know, because that's me, right? I add volume. Not because it's appropriate oftentimes, because I want to spend more time in the gym.
It's fun, and you're challenging yourself.
That's it, 100%.
Yeah, but the fact that he is seeing strength gains.
He's doing great.
His body's not moving much. He's following an app.
He's like getting leaner and building muscle.
Yes, he's like in that. And it is wild how this works, you know? And I'm telling you, it doesn't matter how many times I've done this. It's even a mind fuck for me. So I know these people, how they have the
and
hard
you,
time.
And you're experienced.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
You know what's happening.
But when you're in that Goldilocks zone, you're always tipping in and out of surplus deficit. That's what the Goldilocks zone is. The Goldilocks zone isn't this like special calorie where you're building muscle and burning body at the same time. What it means is that you're staying so close to what maintenance is that sometimes you tip over into anabolic and surplus.
Yep.
Sometimes you tip over into catabolic and a deficit.
That's right.
Now, here's the problem with that is that when you do that, when you push calories hard, this is why bodybuilders still do it this way, because they psychologically
like to see the scale.
They want to see the scale. They want to see their muscle bellies filled out. And psychologically, it's easier for me to run at 4,500 calories, which is way more than I need, because I'm in a bulk right now and I see myself filled out and bulked up. And I'm like, yeah, I'm doing the right thing. Versus if I was probably where I need to be, which is more like 3,900 calories, and I never get to see me all the way filled out. And I just did this 2 days in a row, 4,000 plus calories. And boy, I was like, oh, there I am. Like, there it is. But then I go right back in a day later, and I dropped down to 3,000 calories. All of a sudden, I look like I lost 10 pounds of muscle. I know I didn't lose 10 pounds of muscle. I'm just deflated in comparison.
Look, if you like the show, come find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam's at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee,
and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.
You may not realize it, but every minute of every day, you're enjoying your First Amendment freedoms. You can wear what you want, give out your opinion for free, even if it's unpopular. Listen to your playlist. You can put a sign out on your front lawn that says, "Vote for Bigfoot, someone you can believe in." Pray to the God of your choice, or don't. You have the right to hang with a posse that thinks like you do. Tell the government what you think about its policies. They're the freedoms that let you be you. And they're all brought to you by the First Amendment. Moving like a river in my soul. Learn more at freedomforum.org.